This is Scott Becker with the Scott Becker Business Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Matthew Ruda. Matthew is the founder of a firm called Swine Tech, which I think is a combination of swine and technology. And we'll talk more about it with Matthew today. Matthew, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Matthew Ruda. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast today. I was born in North Carolina, raised in Iowa, went to the University of Iowa, and now study at Johns Hopkins. And really, my life's passion was to be an obstetrician, I guess. I guess I wouldn't say life's passion. It was a passion for 3-4 years. And then I realized that I had a real passion for helping people accomplish their goals in pig farming as I was managing a sow operation. And Swine Tech allowed me to do that with not just one farm, but farms all over the world. And that's just been a it's been really exciting. And I can remember looking back and saying, you know, this is what I cared about. It's always seemingly changing and evolving, but really appreciative for what we do at Swine Tech and helping pigs all over the world.
Now, in terms of helping pigs all over the world, this is not a mission statement that you often hear at Johns Hopkins, I guess.
No, not at all. It's actually a big reason why I went there. A big focus there is all around health. And we have found in so many ways that learning from healthcare, the processes that nurses and doctors employ to provide a high quality of care for their patients, there's so many areas of those processes that can be implemented into livestock management to ensure that we're giving them a high quality of care as well. And so I've been able to learn from my fellow classmates that are nurses and doctors and just really, really successful individuals.
And what we're learning throughout the world is that livestock health is actually very important to human health. When something goes wrong with livestock health or animal health, at some point we find it mutates over and it ends up being a disaster for human health as well. So livestock health, critically important to all of us.
Yeah, some diseases are zoonotic, which means they can evolve from an animal to a person. Some of them aren't. One that really isn't was the H1N1, which there is a swine flu, but it kind of got mismarketed there in the media. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the swine industry was no stranger to other various forms of coronaviruses. None of them are related to the one that's out today, COVID-19. But very familiar with how they spread and how they evolve within a herd and population. And we always joke that the swine industry was socially distant before it was cool. I mean, you had to shower into all facilities, wear new clothes, and it's a process just to make sure that every herd in itself doesn't become subject to a disease that might be going on in another barn.
And talk for a moment there, because very hard to get the pigs and the swine to wear masks.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, herd immunity is something that we can wisely accept in the swine industry. So if a big virus does come through, herd immunity is typically the best approach. However, you do end up having a small percentage of animals that die with that approach. And so when we look at it from a human perspective, we can't just say we're okay with 3 or 4% of people passing away. And so here herd immunity becomes much less reasonable. But when you are in a pig farm, what you do is you just try to separate the herd or get in there and treat as soon as you can. The more on top of it you are, the quicker you can solve it. And so a lot of people are better than others. And there's just so many different strategies. Iowa State's a big leader in that area.
One of the greatest, right? So take a moment. And so you take a moment on Swine Tech and how you founded Swine Tech and what Swine Tech does exactly.
Yeah, so Swine Tech was founded by accident. I was managing a sow farm in the Waterloo area. I was managing a farrowing house in the Waterloo area. And we were doing really well and we were hitting our goals. But the one thing that was keeping us from going above and beyond was the fact that mothers were laying on their baby piglets. After they were born, the piglet would wander underneath the mother and she'd lay down and it would suffocate to death. That was, I mean, you'd pick up buckets of dead baby pigs every single day. And that wasn't easy because you really felt like you were helpless. Move forward a year or so, I was walking in one morning and one mom had laid on 8 of her babies. And I gathered them up and she laid on 3 more when I came back. And so that just really bugged me. And I said, there has to be a better way. And in the swine industry, what people typically do is they'll hear that piglet and you just know as an employee whether or not that piglet is in distress because it's going to die. And so you run over and help that baby pig. But you might be in that room only 2 or 3 hours out of the entire day. So I wanted to use voice recognition to teach technology to hear those frequencies, those rhythmic patterns of those piglets in distress, and then a conditioning device to alert a mom to sit up and allow that piglet to run free. And the universe, it's just been a long road to make that happen.
Talk to me for a moment, because those of us that are from more urban centers, not as rural centers, don't know these questions. So a mother pig who sleeps on her piglet, is that just a lack of intelligence, a lack of understanding, or why does that happen? And the next question is, when you deal with pigs all the time, are the pigs friendly? Do they have personalities? I mean, I know it's kind of hard because they're being produced for slaughter ultimately, but are they friendly animals? And what's some of your take on, are they smart? Are they not smart? Why does it lay on its piglets? And, you know, is it the same bell curve as humans where some of them aren't very smart?
So there
how does this happen?
There is a bell curve. I don't know how to prove it. I don't know if it's ever been proven, but you can tell there's a bell curve. Some pigs are incredibly smart. Some are not very smart. Being smart for a pig is often misconstrued and compared to that of a dog. A pig is very smart. A pig can be trained to do similar things to a dog, but a dog is companion smart. A pig is survivalistic smart, and they're two very different things. So when we're working with these animals, you do not experience the same level of compassion, love, excitement, curiosity, maybe some areas curiosity that you would with a dog, though. That connection isn't there. That pig, it is survivalistic. It doesn't know you. It goes away. Whereas a puppy just seems to automatically be drawn towards you. There is a big difference, and I like to say survivalistic versus companion. When it comes to laying on pigs, this problem happens even more so when it's like a pasture-raised pig or, you know, out in like the backyard or something like that, because you have a little less protective equipment. But what we've done over the years through genetics to drive a very efficient industry is we have selectively bred for sows that are a little bit more docile, a little bit easier to work with, a little less aggressive, right? And in that sense, when they're laying on a pig, they don't have that same fiery attitude of my piglet squealing, I'm going to kill whoever is bugging it. And that nonchalant behavior can somewhat lead to this type of situation. Now, I say that, prefacing or backing that up with not everybody agrees with that. And there's a lot of different reasons that might explain it, but that's the one that I like to kind of lean towards.
No, but it's fascinating because if the pig was aggressive, when you go and try to save the baby piglet, the mother pig might want to kill you. The flip side is if the pig was really smart and turned on and intellectually turned on, it might be smarter about not laying on its baby pig. So it's a very complicated mix of qualities.
Yeah, I mean, when you're working with these animals, you're moving them in various situations. You need to help the little piglets as they're being birthed. And if that mother is being really aggressive, you're going to have a lot of other pigs die throughout the birthing process as opposed to being laid on. So in a little bit of a way, it's a trade-off. Our goal is to let's accept the trade-off where the pig survives as long as it can. And instead of having it get laid on by its mother, let's keep it alive. And let's hope that it can live a longer life that, I guess, benefits humanity in the world in a bigger way.
Oh, fantastic. So you've been a founder of a business. Brilliant young person, at least young compared to me, who's much older, brilliant person. What advice do you have for, you know, founders, business people? What do you start to like look at and think, like, if I was starting a business or I'm running a business, here's a few things, you know, grains of thought, things that you would have people think about.
Yeah, so the path of least resistance is one. There's ways to solve problems. You might have found a way. Is there a better way that gets you at least close to the best way? And sometimes that might not just be not letting perfect be the enemy of good enough. I mean, sometimes that might be two very different product directions. And just understanding, you know, if I solve 60% of the problem, is that path to market less costly, faster than if I try to solve 80% of the problem? So just figuring out, like, how much do you actually need to solve for you to run a successful business? Customer discovery, especially when you're passionate and convicted around your solution. We have recently unloaded a new product that brings caregiving practices and process to an entirely new level in the industry. But to do that, I had to have over 100 phone calls, over half of the industry working with me, answering questions around what works, what doesn't, what's your perception of your job, what's the employee's perception of their job, what's your perception of your boss. Really digging into that is essential. I think the biggest advantage a founder might have is if they already have connections in the industry, it's much easier to drive that level of engagement around that customer discovery. It's become a buzzword, and I can honestly admit early on, I thought it was kind of that buzzword thing. We tell everybody, make sure people want your stuff. But when my back was up against the wall and the early COVID outbreaks hit and the whole industry broke with the processing plants going down, I implemented it. I implemented it as I was trained, and we've truly seen the benefits. That's been huge in itself. And so I really think understanding path of least resistance and truly passionately understanding what the customer is facing and what they need are the two most important things that I think get overlooked.
And your point's well taken, because it's much easier to have those discussions with customers if they already trust and know you. But it's so important to actually know what your customers want, because there's so much in business and in everything of people developing solutions that often nobody really wants, because someone's not made the effort to really have those 100 phone calls you're talking about. Does somebody really want this? Or do they really want to buy this? Do they really want to use this? And I think that just is remarkably good advice. So what are your, when you look at goals, you look at priorities, you're building this great business. You're also doing a master's degree or something at Johns Hopkins. I mean, what a magnificent young leader. Where do you see yourself in 5-10 years? Where do you see yourself?
Yeah, so I guess before I hit that, I'll respond to your last statement. With customer discovery, if you don't know them well, it's really hard to push back on somebody and really question whether or not their feedback is. Being able to push that person and say, when they say, you know, this is my problem, being able to say, is it really your problem? Tell me, can you prove to me why it's the problem? It can be considered disrespectful if you don't know people well. So it can be hard, but it's important to do that so that they're not feeding you feelings versus facts. Before I also go ahead.
But let me comment that as well, because we'll have in some of our businesses, less mature salespeople, less mature customer people. And what will happen is they'll get nervous because anything a customer says, they think we should run and do. And when we do want to serve the customer, we have to make sure something the customer is actually thought about that they really want, they'll actually buy when we develop it versus a quick whim or a quick emotional thought. And they're very different things versus a deep need the customer has versus chasing our tail in different directions, because we really haven't analyzed what the customer has said or really thought more deeply about it. So I think your point is just, it resonates well. But let you continue.
Yeah, no, that's completely on point. And one thing I would never, ever go without again is having a podcast as a startup. The ability to leverage a podcast to get in front of industry thought leaders, individuals that you need to talk to, and then to leverage that to have those tough conversations has been completely invaluable to helping us get through this. That's another thing. Even if it's an episode a month, just having that opportunity to leverage that to sit down in front of your customers. And And you're no stranger to podcasts, so you're probably preaching to the choir on that one.
No, 100%. I mean, a magnificent way to connect. I mean, 100%. Just a pleasure to visit with people, learn what's going on, and people generally enjoy telling their stories and so forth, and a great pleasure. I mean, really fantastic.
So in regards to your question about the next 5 years, the whole NBA thing was more or less an accident. I had a buddy who was starting to do it. We were in the COVID thing, and I was like, you know what? There are some things I've been wanting to work on. I wanted to take a lot of the free courses, but I was, you know what? Let's look into some stuff. I ended up applying, and we started going with that, and
that's been fun. But in 5 years, my goal is to bring Swine Tech to a larger organization, a global organization, that we can leverage their knowledge, their wisdom, their resources to really bring this technology and these capabilities to people beyond North America and really make a bigger difference. And I think 5 years ago, I said my 5-year goal and not even close. So who knows what it's going to be in 5 years, but I really hope on a global level, we're able to serve and protect and aid the global pork industry.
Got it. And so what a fascinating thing. And you'll figure out how to expand sales and distribution, how much or whether you take in or maybe you already have taken outside capital, how you either bring in a financial partner or a strategic partner that really get you access to accounts throughout the entire world and become a major, major world force.
That success is great. But at the end of the day, we're in an industry that's lagging behind a bit in regards to technology. It's a difficult industry to put the infrastructure in place to really leverage the new digital devices. And so being a part of helping the industry move into the digital age, and then after they've moved into the digital age, leveraging all of those resources to make change happen. There's so much growth that can take place if we just have the proper tools.
Well, fantastic. You've done an amazing, remarkable job, Matthew, in building what you're building and building a career. Look forward to following what you're doing and following you. Just magnificent. Thank you for joining the Scott Becker Business Podcast today. Remarkable. Thank you.
Thank you.